Such an interesting journey. These four foundations, you know, you sort of start to put it together in our heads, and we realize if it hadn't been for our kind of obliviousness, the Buddha could have just said, be mindful of everything. But then we would have missed what's going on kind of hidden from us, you know, especially the second and third foundations. We totally would miss those unless he pointed them out. States of mind, we're like a fish swimming in water. We don't even know we're inside of our state of mind unless we're aware of it. So let's explore the fourth foundation in the kind of context of what my excellent colleagues have presented. And you might have sort of picked up, there's sort of a hierarchy of objects of mindfulness here. We started with body, just the physicality of body, contact with physical phenomena. And then the last three foundations are all in the mind in various ways. You know, whether or not that contact is pleasant or unpleasant, the underlying states of mind. Then the fourth foundation, mindfulness of dhammas with a small d in Pali language, it refers to specific phenomena that arise in our minds as we encounter existence, life around us. And this is subtle. This is subtle stuff, but the more we can get into it, it can help us be clearer about who we are and what's happening in our lives and how to untangle ourselves from what goes on in our heads about what happens in life. Anilayo, someone else mentioned him, contemporary German monk and leading expert on these foundations, calls the fourth foundation mental factors and categories. That's how he translates it. Others use the English term mind objects. And, you know, any of those translations are a little bit, not exactly misleading, but they're not as precise as the reality of it, the Pali word dhammas. So a way of seeing this is while the third foundation is about states of mind, the fourth foundation is about specific mind objects or ways that we concretize that which arises in our mind, what we do with it. And as some of you know, the fourth foundation is made up of five lists. And these are lists you encounter elsewhere in the Buddha's teachings. And I got to say, when I first encountered this many, many years ago, I was like, well, what do I do with that? You know, the lists of lists, it's just like, I just kind of shook it off and went elsewhere for a long time. But there's actually, it's amazing. So the first three, and by the way I approach sharing the Dhamma is I want it to make a difference for you. So I don't just like want to babble on about lists and things unless it's actually going to land somewhere. So that's sort of my intention here, just in case you all want to hang out, which I would understand if we're talking about five lists. But the first three, the five hindrances, the five aggregates, and the six sense doors, if you look at them a certain way, they have to do with factors of obscuration, that which obscure the mind, factors of identification. In a way, they're obstacles to be mindful of in order to find freedom. They're things that, well, we'll explore this. And the last two, the seven factors of awakening and the Four Noble Truths, have to do with factors or elements of freedom, aspects that to be aware of as part of waking up. So it's sort of like the first three are climbing up the mountain and the second two are going over the top. And like I said, in the earlier years, I just found this confounding. I didn't know what to do with it. It just sounded like a whole bunch of lists. But over time, it became clearer that this seeming complication really had to do with the innate simplicity of insight practice, which is being mindful moment by moment of whatever presents itself to you. And this is just helping us clarify what presents itself to us so that we can effectively be mindful of it. And I'm going to put a little more in the short time I have emphasis on the first three, because it's really useful to think of these as objects of mindfulness, the first three of these lists, bringing them onto the path. And one of my favorite quotes of the Buddha from the numerical discourses is, the mind is clear, luminous, obscured by visiting defilements. It's an incredibly short sentence. The mind is clear, luminous, obscured by visiting defilements. So you could say that the first three lists include most of our key visiting defilements. And as we can become more mindful or aware of those defilements, then we start to see through them. They start to dismantle. They start to lose their grip on us. We realize that they're only visiting defilements. They're not us, because we think they're us. But when we are mindful of them, then we just, oh yeah, you again. You know, it's that thing with Mara. Because Mara tries to obscure the Buddha, shows up all through his entire life, tries to trick him, and he'll say, ah, I see you, Mara. So that's kind of like how this is. It's like, I see you, Mara, to all these visiting defilements. And that's the magic of mindfulness, you know? As we slowly, slowly become confident that being mindful, cultivating mindfulness in the midst of that which seems to grab us is in fact that which frees us. So it's right in the crux of when it's in our face that mindfulness works so marvelously. Although, when we use the word practice, that means we have to do it again and again. But it does work. And that's also why it's hard, because we're just coming up against the very things that we are adhered to. And so to be mindful of the things we're inherently stuck to takes some doing, but that's how we get free. So sometimes I think of these three as kind of like climbing the mountain, just because they are a little challenging, but worthwhile, because then you get a big view from the top. So I'm not going to bog us down in the list too much, but kind of an overview, or trying to put a thread through them that hopefully you'll find useful in your practice when you go home. Because, you know, I know it's like, sometimes I think, like I do Dharma talks, and if people can't remember more than three things, so it's kind of hard to know how do you make, you know, five lists come down to three things. But it's really about being mindful as things present themselves. There's a cat. Where's our cat? So the first of, talk about the hindrances. The first of these three lists, the hindrances, is in turn a list of mental factors that obstruct us. They seem to obstruct us. We encounter them in practice and in life, and they are desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. All those kind of things arise in our practice and life. I hear about them, we hear about them, we think about them. So all of us were probably plagued by any one, if not all, of these just in the course of today. Your time on the cushion, you're diverted by things you want or don't want, or you kind of sink into sloth and torpor, or twitching with restlessness, all that, or doubt. And the big change for me in thinking about the hindrances as part of the four foundations is that now I don't look at them as obstacles to be overcome, like a war, like a victory, or personal failing to be removed, which is what is really easy for people to think of. You know, it's my kind of like my hindrance, my problem. But they're not. They're just objects of mindfulness. That's all they are. They're objects of mindfulness. And if you turn them that way, then it becomes way more manageable. It's not a problem anymore. It's not a problem. In my own practice, restlessness is probably my biggest bugaboo, hindrance-wise. And it can be kind of difficult. You know, at times it's hard to sit still. I'm twitching. I will do walking meditation sometimes. There's a way of dealing with that, but that's just what comes up for me. But as I've internalized my understanding that restlessness can be looked at, or is, because everything is, one of the foundations of mindfulness, then we can shift our view. And it's not a problem to be, you know, solved, but something to be aware of. We don't have to react to it. We don't have to fix it. You don't even have to change it. Restlessness can be there and be restless as long as it wants, but just be aware of it while it's happening and slide down into it and see what it's made of and where, you know, we start to see, and not like we're trying to figure it out, but just as we are cultivate mindfulness, then we start to, it reveals itself. So we kind of see where our own particular hooks are, where we're stuck there. And then in the very process of seeing, the hooks will release. So that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. And so we start to see that this is not a problem at all, but a doorway to freedom. Because we all know we got a whole bunch of stuff kind of tangling us up, right? So we ain't going to be able to be free of the tangles until we see through the tangles. We untangle the tangles. And the only way to do that is to be aware of them. And so this is like a perfect kind of like spotlight that shines right on the tangles. And it's like, oh, be mindful. So that's why it's so beautiful that this is in the Four Foundations. And you'll hear teachings about the hindrances in other ways because they float around in the suttas in other places. But to have them be part of the Fourth Foundation, I think, is just transformational. The second of these three lists that I'm, especially the first three lists, is what's called the khandhas in Pali, the skandhas in Sanskrit, or in English, the aggregates. And these khandhas are so amazing because it's the Buddha's understanding of the five factors that make up our mistaken sense that we have an inherent self. We think we do, you know. I mean, conventionally, I'm Steve, I get that. But ultimately, I think I'm Steve also, kind of. We all do. But that's because we don't really see clearly how the five skandhas are working, how they are interlacing and continually in action, and we posit a sense of self from them. And the more, at least in my own practice, the more I've just looked into where freedom lies, the more clearer it's become that untangling the five skandhas is, it's amazing. It's critical. It's revolutionary. And so the more we can be aware of these factors as they're coming up, and, you know, and try it out, like, you know, sometimes when something arises in our lives and we can really see our selfing jump up, like if we're angry, if we're self-righteous, if we're offended, if all those kind of things, just be aware of the five skandhas in the middle of that. Just take a look. Oh, what's going on here? And you'll see how they're working. And I should list them. The five are form, vedanas. You just heard about vedanas. It's the second place it comes up in the same cycle. So pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Vedanas is the second. Perception, how we perceive things, concretize things, make up names for things. Mental formations, which is our whole process of thinking about stuff and planning stuff. And consciousness. Those are the five. And from a Buddhist point of view, you know, check it for yourself. But if you look into your sense of self, what else is there? It's like that really covers it. And in a sense, these five are like a ladder of subtlety. Again, it's like a ladder of subtlety within the bigger ladder of subtlety of the Four Foundations in terms of what goes on inside of us that results in a sense of self. Starts from contact with physical, and then at contact, we respond pleasant or unpleasant. It's our first reptilian. And then we identify what it is. Vedanas happens first, then we figure out what it is, then we think about it. Then we're conscious of it, kind of like that. You could argue the sequence, whatever, a little bit, but kind of like that. Perceptions is the way we name things. And mental formations, I don't know if you ever experience thinking when you're trying to meditate. Did it ever happen to you? Has anybody ever had themselves thinking? So if that ever happens to you, you could just say, oh yeah, part of the skandhas. Mindful of that. It really helps you place it. You know, it's not just an accident we're trying to be mindful of, we're thinking. It's right there in the Fourth Foundation. And consciousness is so interesting. I'm still processing this one, but, you know, to be conscious of something, it's almost like, what's that thing? I think, therefore I am, or I'm... Anyway, we tend to think because we're conscious of something, therefore we found out where our self is, because it's that thing which is being conscious. well, I mean, it's actually not. It's just consciousness is happening. But to be able to be mindful of it helps us not think it's us. But it's a stretch. But it's right there. So you just, you know, work with these in your practice. It's a, the fact that it's in the fourth foundation is super helpful because it helps us bring it into our practice and see how we build a sense of self. And as most of us know, the sense of self, it's one of the greatest obstacles to freedom. It's one of the areas where Buddha Dharma is unique in terms of really cutting through this sense of self. Other meditative traditions don't do it like the Buddha did. That's one of the big, incredible jumps he made. And so as we practice with this, we slowly, slowly begin to realize there's no self to be attached to. How freeing is that? And sometimes I've, over the years, a couple times I've had encounters with great masters, just a few times, kind of eyeball to eyeball, but man, there's nobody home. I mean, it's just like vastness, but there's no one like tweaking back at you and kind of, you know, like you and me, we're all like maneuvering and who likes who and who's thinking what about who and all that stuff. It doesn't happen. It's gone. Just this deep infinity. We've all got that in us latently. It's just obscure. So again, including these five skandhas is a door opener, turning a complication into a freedom. And then the third, the one that I'm really trying to emphasize here, is the six sense doors. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, or taste, body, and mind, that are the ways we encounter or contact the world around us. And we get lost in these, we identify with them, all that stuff. To be mindful of them is a great liberator. We kind of don't even realize how much. That's precisely, that's it. That's how we contact our life experience. And we're sort of lost in it. But to be able to see it while it's happening, to be mindful of it while it's happening, it just unlinks this sense of attachment and bondedness. And as we all know, you know, our contact through the sense doors is one of our most, well, it's our engagement with the universe around us. So it's diverting. We get lost in it. You know, how many times we find ourselves trying to listen to somebody and then, I don't know, our attractive person of choice walks by in a corner of our eye and we kind of go, whoop, our attention goes, or whatever the thing is, a Ferrari, I don't care, you know, or unpleasant, but we get taken away from being right here just because we're, but to be mindful there. Third foundation, third of the five lists in the fourth foundation. Wow, three sets of numbers. That's hard to say. So the unifying thread, if you can remember three things, the unifying thread is that the key is identifying these three as parts of the fourth foundation and objects of mindfulness, and just bringing them onto the path that way. That's what's so beautiful about this. Buddha really is suggesting, whatever it is, just be mindful. Whatever it is, just be mindful. And our, you know, our tendency is to make enemies of these things, to make a project out of them, to try to fight them off, to try to fix them, to try to correct them, to try to reverse our human errors, all that stuff. Not that you can't do some of that a little bit some of the time, but as long as you do it mindfully. Mindfully first, you've got to fix something, fix it, but make sure you're being mindful, and then maybe you don't have to fix it. Maybe you just have to be mindful. So I've just found this really transformational. And then the last two, I'll just mention it, because part of the idea of Buddhist essentials is to kind of lay out the essentials. The fourth is the seven factors of awakening. And these are natural, sequential, one leading to the next. And they're kind of self-revealing, meaning they emerge out of our practice. They're mindfulness, investigation, of dhammas, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity. And we're not going to go into that, but these are the factors that emerge in the journey of awakening as we kind of, as awakening comes closer, as it's more, what we start to taste a little bit, these start to become more part of our natural flow of what's going on in us. And we should be cultivating mindfulness even when they show up. You know, be mindful. Don't get lost in them. Don't get swept away. Don't think, oh, how equanimous I am. That's a danger sign. Be mindful of whatever arises in this way. You know, any one of those seven could be a whole evening's exploration. But to hold it here is just to be aware when these factors arise by themselves. And there's a place for a kind of rejoicing in a unattached way, but to go, oh yeah, that's kind of beautiful. There's opening happening here. So it's a rejoicing without being sticky. And you got to sort of have an open hand, kind of rejoicing and letting go at the same time, kind of like that. Referring to the equanimity factor in the sutta, Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha says, if the equanimity awakening factor is present in one knows there is the equanimity awakening factor in me. If the equanimity awakening factor is not present in one knows there is no equanimity awakening factor in me. So it's that whole idea of just being aware of what's arising. But these are like, we probably wouldn't put those seven together unless it was in the sutta, unless the Buddha had talked about it. So to really kind of take those in and explore them and sort of, you know, put them in our, I don't know, file cabinet's the right word, but kind of a signpost on the way, signs on the path. Pay attention when they arise, rejoice when they arise. That's really good. And in the very last list is, you know, familiar to anyone who has studied Buddhist thinking, which is the Four Noble Truths. Many of us, or a show of hands, how many were the Four Noble Truths? Many, many of us have. Who have? Yeah, there you go, a bunch of hands. And to refresh, the four are the unsatisfactory nature of depending on conditioned existence for happiness, the fact that this is caused by clinging, trying to find happiness in conditioned existence. We erroneously cling to things that we can't depend on. The possibility of freedom from that conundrum and how to get there, the Eightfold Path to get there. As to Four Noble Truths, sometimes a medical model is used. You know, doctor finds a disease, determines the cause, prescribes a medication, and applies a cure. What's kind of fascinating about having this at the end of the Four Foundations is that we're cultivating mindfulness of these. We kind of tend to like logically think about them in a lot of ways. You know, oh yeah, the Four Foundations, and have this nifty little list and check it off and think about it and stuff. But to be mindful as they appear, that's really powerful. You know, to be mindful of what is the nature of dukkha. I hesitate to use, I don't like to use the word, even the unsatisfactory, I don't like to use, but dukkha, you know, depending on conditioned existence for happiness. Like, what a conundrum that is. You know, it's like trying to depend on butter to stay a stick of butter on a hot pavement. It just won't work. So the more we can just see into it, to be aware of these four foundations, bring them into our practice that way, then it starts to open up in a whole new way. And we can see when they're acting out in our lives. It can help us frame what's going on. So that it's, I used to think that was kind of like a add-on. And to be sure, there's other versions of the four foundations in other traditions. In Chinese tradition, I think this one isn't there. So whatever. But in Pali tradition it is, so we'll go with that, and it's really useful. I mean, it's just, you know, since the whole idea is to be mindful of everything, you can't lose by being mindful of this. And even like the third noble truth, the freedom from that unsatisfactoriness. I mean, we kind of have some sense of what that is, or we wouldn't even be here. But how much time do we really look at that? What that is, what that means? How much does it pull us ahead on the path to really see it mindfully, to open our vision to it mindfully, can be really helpful. So I think that I maybe want to sit. So let's move to sitting here. I'm not going to say, and then we're going to have a breakout group at 2:30. So I'm not going to say a whole lot because in terms of guiding, because we've been, A, I'm not that much of a guider, but B, it's all kind of like the whole enchilada over these four foundations. So just close your eyes and relax. Oops, I don't have a bell. I do have a bell. I'll get it when we start. We'll just start without a bell. So if it works for you, especially open to these first three lists that we were touching on, perhaps the hindrances, if any of them are up for you, sloth and torpor, restlessness, whatever it may be, just let your awareness rest there in that experience and see how you can see through, lighten whatever grasping or aversion there may be. Or perhaps the skandhas, the aggregates, the five aspects of ourselves. Or perhaps the six sense doors. I'll leave it at that. But it's a broad panorama of mind objects. And of course, we always just go back to the breath, go back to the breath in this moment, moment by moment. But if in our complexity something else arises, here's a way to bring it into mindfulness.